The Venturi's Voice podcast brings together some of technology's brightest minds to discuss all things leadership, technology and staffing. Keep the conversation going in the Venturi's Voice Slack group and have the opportunity to meet some of our amazing guests. You can download Venturi's Voice via iTunes or via the Venturi Group website at venturi-group.com. Today's guest is Barry Weech, the CIO of Domino's Pizza of the UK and Ireland. Thanks for coming on the show, Barry. It's, you know, like I say, I've been waiting to have you on for a while now, so appreciate you finally finding the time. I know it's been a crazy few months for you, so I think should have plenty to talk about with that. But first of all, thank you so much for taking the time and coming on the show.
That's a pleasure. I'm looking forward to it.
I always have difficulty with people like you because there's so much to kind of go at and so many places that we could potentially start. But I thought today it'd actually be interesting just to kind of cover the last few months. I know that there's been so much going on in kind of the tech sphere and as well as security and privacy. And I'm sure that you've kind of been involved in a lot of those kind of projects in particular. But what I wanted to look at in particular is, you know, because of all the craziness, the things that are going on in security and data, you know, from a hiring perspective, it's always an interesting one when I think about that, because although there's a lot that's been going on in the space, it doesn't necessarily mean that just because things have changed quite quickly that there's going to be the readily available talent that's going to actually be able to do the job that needs to be doing in this kind of climate where, you know, technology and policies are changing so quickly. So, you know, that in itself is incredibly challenging in order to kind of acquire the talent necessary to move this kind of change forward. So I wanted to kind of start there, really. I know it's probably quite a big question, but like, how do we even manage that? Because things are literally changing quicker than I think people can actually skill up at this point.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, look, GDPR, the elephant in the room, you know, we've all just been through a fairly intensive ordeal over the last 12, 18 months, some more recently who didn't get on the band early enough. But I think in general, what we're starting to see is that people are, through this process in the companies that they've been working for, have become much more familiar and much more up to date with not just the GDPR side of privacy and things like that, but it's sort of brought broader topics to the table as well, which has been great from a data security, information security perspective. So I think in general, the talent has broadened its processes of understanding what skills they need. And I think that's a good thing for the industry because we'll start to see people cross-skilling in these very important areas around privacy and how do we keep information secure in everyday roles such as, you know, software development, in terms of, you know, customer service, you know, operations. And it's very important that we encourage and certainly do our part internally to help them on that journey as well. So I think for me, the thing that GDPR, this exercise, and I'm sure very similar to how Y2K, you know, it was the bubble that never was. It was the scary monster that never came out of the closet. GDPR has been a very similar process where the native benefit of GDPR for an individual is privacy and protecting information. But in fact, it's been good for industry because it's highlighted a number of areas where our people are weak at understanding around data security in general. So I think more and more people and candidates are actually going out and either taking up courses themselves or encouraging their business to upskill them in those areas that they need. Which is good for us in the long run.
Indeed. I agree. I think it's been a massively positive thing across the board, I think, for industry. And I think people who haven't embraced it, I think there should be a question mark asked for that in the first place. I mean, certainly from a business practice perspective. I think the only caveat to that is just the expense. I think some people rightly or wrongly, have spent, you know, a lot of money or had to spend a lot of money in order to update, to ensure compliance. And, you know, I think that there's, you know, there's obviously a purpose for that. But at times, you know, do you think that it's necessarily fair that that kind of expense is expected to be in industry? What's your kind of take on that?
I think the intent of the legislation is really to protect information for individuals. I think the concept of GDPR is absolutely in the right place. I mean, personally, I would want to control my information. I want my kids to control their information. We're so bombarded with unsolicited messages these days that, you know, that have come from organisations never heard of before. I think it's really important that we take back some of that control. And I think, unfortunately, for corporates of this world now and governments as well, that comes at a cost. But I think if we look at it in terms of the positives we get out of that process, the cost sort of washes its face at the end of the day. We at Domino's have taken a very positive approach to GDPR because we see it as an opportunity to make sure that we are communicating with people who want to communicate with, want us to communicate with them. So in terms of our opt-in, opt-out processes and our database of customers, we now know that we have a cleansed data set that we can use to communicate with these people, and they want us to communicate with them. So I think it's been a very positive experience in that respect. So I think the money that we have spent is well worth it in the long run. And I think if we look at it that way, you can certainly get into a discussion about, you know, all this expense that the government's putting on us, but it's no different really to a financial change or a legal legislative change around other areas of business. It's just in an area that we're probably not as familiar with, and it only comes around, you know, maybe once every decade or so when these things do get reviewed.
Yeah, agreed. I kind of take that take on it as well. I don't think I can add anything else to that. I think it's my kind of thoughts exactly. I want to change, like, with before we kind of start boring everyone to death with GDPR, because sadly, like, I think it's been one of those things that I've quite enjoyed getting kind of stuck into, which is a horrible thing to admit, of course, but nonetheless, I find it quite fascinating. But I wanted to kind of change the topic a little bit. And first of all, I'm sure you must get asked this question all the time, but do you get free pizza from Domino's?
Yes, we get free pizza from Domino's. mainly in the workplace, though. So we often have, you know, I mean, you live and die by your own product. If our team members don't love our product, then, you know, that's not a great reflection on us as a business. So we want to make sure we expose them as much as possible to our product and what we offer our customers so that they can love it as much as our customers do. And they can sing the praises of our product when they're standing around with the family and saying, hey, have you tried our new, you know, meat filter product that we've got out for the world, you know, for the football that's on at the moment. So I think for us, it's really about making sure that they understand what we're giving to our customers, so because they are our customers as well. But, you know, we're very conscious around the implications of health on that. So it's not like something that we have every single day, but certainly various meetings, when we invite suppliers in, often we'll treat them to our Domino's product as well, because again, everyone's a customer in our eyes. You know, they all love pizza, so why not share the best that we've got? So yes, the answer to your question is yes, and get free pizza here if you work at Domino's.
Yeah, if that's not a great recruitment tool, I don't know what is. Certainly for a lot of people. Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating model, the Domino's model, and when you think about it digitally, you know, I can imagine in its inception, it's very much become, you know, like a lot of, you know, larger companies around. It's been a lot around data, really, hasn't it? You know, we're building more and more data, and I can only imagine like that how much something like Domino's has scaled up in their kind of data efforts. In your position, you know, as a CIO, are you still quite involved in, you know, heavily involved in the things like, you know, building out the data teams and, you know, your kind of building a direction for the data with something like Domino's, or have Domino's looked to bring on like a CDO or anything along those lines?
Yeah, look, I absolutely. It's a joint effort here at Domino's. I mean, when you look at retail businesses in general, they have to reinvent themselves all of the time, because our world changes so frequently, both from a customer's perspective and an employee perspective. And I guess my job is to make sure that we're extracting the most amount of value we possibly can around our technology and information investment. We have a head of digital here, and someone who it takes an active process in the CRM database that we build and the data that we use. But what you've got to understand is that the data spreads much more across our business than just our customers. So we use that information for our franchisees, for example, to help them understand their businesses more. We use that data ourselves to understand our business. So it is always evolving in our organization around how we're using data. Where do we get data from? How do we enrich it? How do we make it add value back to us to help us make really smart, good decisions for the benefit of our customers, for our staff, for our franchisees, et cetera? And that's the way I like to, it's a very much a partnership internally. So it's not one person or one department that's responsible for it. We all have key roles to play in collection of data and management of that data as well, and ultimately how we're using it.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I agree. And I think that's the right answer. It's a cultural thing, isn't it, to have a business behave in that way. I've had a few CDOs on the show, and that's, I think, have always been the most consistent messages that I've had from various people who are seen in senior data positions, is that they've kind of stressed the importance of rolling something out actually from a cultural perspective, instead of, you know, across the board, because it influences and impacts everyone in the business and all stakeholders, instead of it built being this kind of, you know, department standalone. I suppose it's just not even viable for that to be an option, which perhaps is a misconception, I suppose.
I think it is a misconception, because I think there's so many elements to data platforms and, you know, analytics around that data as well, that one department couldn't possibly cover all of those aspects. And that, to me, is what the culture of the organization should help drive how we're using that information. And that's super important, because if you just make one department responsible, you may have a very well-oiled machine in terms of our direct marketing capability, but then we lose perspective on what the business is all about and how we make decisions, and that's not right. You know, it needs to be a well-rounded approach.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I really agreed with that one. I think it's so important as well. When was it, you know, you've obviously, you know, I'm sure you've been, I'm not sure how long you've been at Domino's for now, but a number of years, I'm assuming.
So my history, I've spent 5 years in Australian Domino's business, which handled Australia, New Zealand, France, Belgium, Netherlands at the time as CIO. I left the Domino's brand for a number of years and worked for a manufacturing company. And this is my second stint back in the Domino's system, but albeit in the UK. So I've been here since May last year in this role.
Right. And the, you know, I think, you know, the question, I suppose, was that, you know, maybe previously when you had your stint in Australia, Domino's, you know, was there kind of a time where you really started to see that kind of the pressure build to start changing the way that the business was running from a kind of data and information perspective? Was there a time in your career where you really saw kind of dramatic change, or, you know, is that kind of just the perception that I have around data, that it has been this kind of quick turnaround, or has it been kind of a gradual thing? How's that kind of played out from memory through your career? Was there that kind of particular infamous time, if you like?
I think once upon a time, businesses were very transactional in nature. You know, we'd have the promotion, we'd send out, you know, notification to our customers, there's a promotion running, come and buy our product, it's a great price. I think what we've learned in certainly in the Domino's world over time is that it's much broader than that. And when you see brands like Apple, Nike, and those sort of brands that really embody the, the love of the customer concept, that's where a lot of businesses started to head, certainly in the mid to late 2000s, where we recognized that transactional business was dying. You can't just have a transaction. You've got to get customers to understand you, to love your product, and to buy into your brand as much as they buy into what you're selling them. So that, I think the data revolution's evolved in that direction, and we were using the data to try and help understand what our customers were actually after. And that's when many CEOs of large retail organizations started to get the fact that no longer were retail businesses transactional only. We had to actually evolve. And I would suggest that probably mid-2000s was when that sort of realization really started to take hold. Companies were certainly doing it well before then, but I think that's when the majority of organizations started to go, you know what, we've got to really get under the skin of this and understand who we are and what our customers want.
Interesting. Yeah, I think so. So, you know, for you, in the CIO role, what specifically has kind of changed with regards to responsibilities kind of on a day-to-day basis? What are you finding yourself, I suppose, spending a lot of your time on now that perhaps maybe when you're still in Australia, it wasn't as much of a focus of your time, if there is, you know, one or two things?
So we spend a lot less time building data capture mechanisms these days. Excuse me. I spend a lot more time understanding how we can extract more value and how I can help the organization drive that value through the information and data that we're collecting. Certainly insights and strategy around those insights is becoming a much broader topic of conversation. And I guess my job in that is to keep it alive and to help the organization understand how we can tie in the technology piece to this puzzle, to the business piece to the puzzle, to ultimately drive outcomes that our business will get benefit from. I mean, if you're going to spend money in this area, you really want to make sure you get that value back somehow. And it's very difficult to link all of that up. So part of my job is to help the organization understand that and help link it up.
Interesting. So, you know, from as well, you know, I know one of the core topics that we kind of touched on earlier as well is about the kind of the hiring and the responsibilities of to kind of building the bringing the right talent and also, you know, create that data environment. In addition to that, has that been something that's become kind of more of a challenge over time also? Because I suppose that, you know, hiring for some of these roles in order to kind of execute on some of the strategies of today, it's not quite as linear, I suppose, and this is obviously my perspective, but it's not quite as linear to get the right talent as it used to be, because, you know, you used to have people who were kind of technically inept and had this specific skill set that would kind of carry out a specific job. The way that things have changed and the kind of discipline seems to have evolved, so hiring for those roles again seems to me like it would be, I suppose, more challenging perhaps than it used to be. So is that something that, you know, has kind of created a bit of a talent gap, maybe specifically in the UK?
Certainly, I think the talent gap is much broader than just that area. I think that we now crave people that are multifaceted. We want more people to understand business than in the past, perhaps. So when you look at a standard software developer these days, we want them to understand how to write code and how to develop systems, but we also want them to understand our businesses a bit as well, so that they can have input and help shape the digital products that we're producing. Because if we don't have that sort of business acumen at that level, it's really difficult to manage cost around that, because you then have to hire in more people to overlay on top of that, and then that creates a bit of treacle, if you like, where, you know, you can end up wading through treacle all your life to try and get these products out the door. So in our strive to be much more agile and much more lean, our goal has really been around trying to hire for that business acumen, that commercial understanding. And that's very difficult because, you know, we are in a transition phase, I think, in our talent pool at the moment, where we're seeing much more of that. We're seeing many more people understand that it's bigger than just writing code. It's about how to apply that code in a particular commercial environment. And that's, I think, what's creating a bit more of a gap, is finding those types of people who can do those things. There's plenty of people out there who can write code, that's for sure. But having people write code and understand how that business operates adds much more value to the whole process.
Interesting. Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? It's almost it is a massive skill gap, isn't it? Do you think that, why do you think that is? I mean, I hate using the term kind of softer skills, or maybe it's more like kind of business acumen, but do you think it's because the technologists have all of a sudden become the product in a very kind of relatively short period of time, and perhaps that's kind of been unexpected? I don't know. I mean, it's difficult to point at one thing, but if you were to kind of take a poke at it from a high level, what would you perhaps look at the culprit?
I think in this day and age, businesses can't survive without technology. I mean, it's fair to say, because technology drives how our business operate, whether it be from an accounting, how we account for money, to e-commerce, to productivity tools and desktops, laptops, how we communicate. All of these things we now need to be successful in business. And that's driven through competition and what our competitors are doing. So we need to do that plus more. And I think that plays a big part in what the changing role of different individuals in technology in general, in that we need to find ways to be more lean, more efficient. And I think that's driving a bit more of a need to have people who have that broader skill set, who can bring more to the table for the money that you pay them, so that you can compete with other people out there who are maybe not doing it quite as well as you. And I think that's only going to get tighter and worse as we move forward, because business is becoming a much more smarter and much more agile as we go forward. And I think we really have a part to play in making sure that we upskill our own people to have those softer skills that can contribute that as well. And that's going to take some time.
So do you think that that's really where the value is inevitably going to be? I mean, people talk about, you know, high level like automation, AI and things of this nature, right? And that's going to replace a lot of processes. So I think that there's a lot of positives to be taken from things like that, that perhaps it eliminates the monotony of certain tasks and certain roles. But do you think that that places an emphasis on, you know, people having the ability to execute a high-level strategy, for instance?
Yeah, I mean, AI, machine learning, those newer sort of frontiers of technology, it's quite a difficult space to navigate at the moment. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, apprehension, I think, in various circles about those technologies and, you know, how do we regulate or how we don't regulate them, things like that. So there's a real sense of where is this headed thinking in industry to understand, can I get value out of that? What does that do to the culture of my organization, and what skills do I need to bring that to the table, and ultimately will I make money from it? Certainly I think that driving a change in the way we think, particularly around the future strategies and what our organizations will need to compete in the future. Traditional ways of, for example, I'll give you one example of, say, upselling a customer in the future will be much more intuitive and targeted to an individual's needs. And I think AI, machine learning have a part to play in that. And certainly if we don't have the skills to deliver that type of capability in the future, our competitors will. I mean, these things are being commoditized by the likes of Google, likes of Amazon and Microsoft. So they're available, and they're available now for people to start using and building into their product sets. What that comes with is a change, I guess, in the type of people that you need working for you to think more broadly around how to leverage that capability. It's not just about factory automation and all of that sort of stuff at all. It's a much broader topic, and it's going to be a very difficult path to navigate, I think, in the next 5 years at least, to see where we land.
Interesting, mate. Yeah, I do think that's great. It's going to be an interesting 5 years. It may even be, well, I think it's interesting every year. It's almost like an interesting 6 months. We're going to have to change that kind of turn of phrase. I think the technology is speeding things along so quickly. It's going to be an interesting 2 months. It's going to be the next commonly used term. I also wanted to talk about the kind of the digital workspace and, you know, the place of the future, just while we're on the theme of, next gen tech. Do you have like a kind of a philosophy or way that you kind of like to see things pan out? I mean, I know as like, you know, Domino's, for instance, like, you know, I know that you have franchisees, but there's a lot of kind of brick and mortar involved, and brick and mortar is expensive. Are you kind of one for, you know, kind of fully digitalized kind of workspace and this kind of concept of the workspace of the future?
I'm less of an extremist than that, I will say, where you have everyone working remotely. I think there's certain businesses that works well in, and you can make that work from day one if that's the culture of your organization. I think more broadly, we want to, there's a gap narrowing between our personal lives and our work lives. I mean, some would argue that gap doesn't exist, but it actually does in terms of the technology choices that we use at home and what we use at work. And part of it comes from traditional thinking of business and control, and part of it comes from the personal want the newest toy out there sort of thing. So my view is that it's not really about what I want. It's about what everyone who works in this organization wants. So what we have to do is make sure we are flexible and adaptable enough to make sure that we align with the culture our organization's shaping over time. So do I have a view of what the end state will look like? I have some view, but I don't think I could necessarily put a pin on the board and say that's the view that it's going to be in 5 years. We have a direction of travel. We want to make it more flexible for our workers to work where they are, when they want to, so not to disrupt their work-life balance, so to speak, which is a term that's loosely used. My goal is really to make sure that we employ and deploy the correct technologies that get the most out of our people and make them the most productive they can be. And the only way we're going to do that is, one, help them with their work-life balance, so happy employees who are happy to work here in the environment that we've created. And the second thing is making sure that we stay in tune with the needs of the workforce so we can attract that talent. You know, it's not about the pool table and the bar and, you know, the beer on tap and all that sort of thing anymore. It's a much more broader subject topic than that now, with the workplace that you want to work in as an individual, because it all comes back down to, yes, it's the tools, it's the technology, it's the digital capability that you bring to that individual's life to help them. But it's also about the type of work that they do and how you can give them the work that makes them feel engaged and interested. And, you know, that's not always possible. So we've got to try and work out how we can maximize that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. For you personally, though, aside from, I suppose, the practicalities of it, do you still enjoy the kind of interaction? Do you still enjoy kind of a vibrant workplace on a personal level?
I think so, because that's where, you know, co-creation of ideas is something that's very dear to me, and it's very difficult to do that over a Skype call or a remote video conference or audio call, or even collaborating online on a document. Whilst we've got technologies like Office 365 to do all of that, that human interaction, I think, is what we're all about. We want to make sure that we feel valued amongst our peers. It's very difficult to do that remotely working. So I think the human nature is always going to have that element of wanting to belong to something. And the only way you feel that sense of belonging is when you're in a group and you're together and you're talking about the same things and you're empowered by that. So I don't think that will ever disappear from the workplace. What we've got to do is try and make it as part of our philosophy and our culture that those things can still happen.
And, you know, was that kind of part of the drawback, I suppose? Obviously, you worked Domino's, you left, you came back. You sound like the, you know, clearly someone who's is massively inspired by those around him. I think, you know, I feel exactly the same way. It's, I think it really, the collaborative culture that's around you and the level of talent and the people who are directly around you influences you in a major way, as well as kind of contributing to things like, you know, being happy in the workplace. Was that part of the drawback for you going back to Donald, because you know, you felt that kind of that presence there with them as a company, and maybe even the people that you were kind of working directly with?
Yeah, absolutely. Domino's is one of those cultures that, you know, I guess we're recognized worldwide as a brand that's quite digitally capable, a technology company selling pizzas, something that I've heard used quite often. But I think what Domino's does bring is a level of autonomy, and I think that's important for an individual. Autonomy and empowerment. So, you know, certainly we have our sets of challenges. You know, we're always got more work than we can handle, things like that. But I think what Domino's is very good at doing, we've grown quite rapidly over the last decade, for sure, worldwide. Certainly in the UK and I, it's been a large growth trajectory. Now, you know, well over 1,100 stores. So I think that whole environment would not happen without empowering people to just do stuff. And I think that's what really brought me back to the brand. The brand that I know and love is one that allows people to be the best they can be. Certainly there's areas of challenge within that, but that's certainly for me one of the key reasons why I came back to Domino's.
Definitely. Yeah, I think it's so important, isn't it? That kind of interaction. And I suppose, like you say, you know, we spoke about the product itself, obviously, but you know, does that have to be there for you on a personal level to be kind of fully engaged in the project that you're working on? I ask the question a lot to, you know, really technical people, whether it's, you know, is it the tech that they're working with? Is it the people? Is it the longevity of the project? You know, there's obviously a variety of different answers that come along with that. But, you know, for you, is it, do you have to be fully bought into what the brand stands for, what they're building, in order to be, you know, fully engaged? I always make the comparison to, you know, just actually enjoying what you do for a living, I suppose.
I think so. I think there's that sort of sense of accomplishment you want to feel when you see a new product or an upgraded product roll out the door in terms of a digital product. I think for me, it's a bit more multifaceted than that. I think there's certain things that you've got to ticket to the game. You know, you've got to have the right conditions. You've got to have the right salaries and the right, you know, you've got to have your personal needs taken care of. But beyond that, you want a sense of purpose. You want to belong to something that's going to really make a difference. And I think the way that Domino's does that is through that technology piece. You know, how we engage with our customers is so important for us. The first thing that they see about our brand is when they come to our online presence and when they start and want to order a Domino's pizza to their door. And I think that, to me, gives me a great sense of pride and accomplishment when we're able to do that. And be the number one pizza brand in the world as well. So certainly there's elements of that. There's also elements of, if you look at companies that I wouldn't want to work for, certainly those that have sort of questionable, you know, benefits to society. I think there's certain companies that I would struggle with in that my headspace wouldn't allow me to go down that path. Excuse me. I think Domino's though, and brands like Domino's and certainly other brands that fulfill a need for customers that don't destroy society, so to speak, are probably the ones that I gravitate towards, because at the end of the day, you want to feel part of something that's good and wholesome. And it's very hard to find a lot of brands that do that. There's always the corporatization of a brand to say, well, you know, they just want to make money and they burn people and all that sort of stuff. Well, that's certainly something that doesn't float my boat at all. I want to be part of something that's sort of good for everybody.
Yeah, Agreed. Agreed. Yeah, well, I think it's hugely important. And something I certainly as a senior leader such as yourself, I think it's even more kind of paramount to have a sense of purpose for why you want to, you know, represent an organization in such a way.
Yeah, a sense of purpose is really, it's very difficult, excuse me, it's very difficult to find a sense of purpose in a number of things. What I mean by that is a genuine sense of why do we come to work every day? There's always personal goals. I mean, is it to earn enough money to buy your next boat or have a holiday home or whatever? There's that sense of purpose, which is your personal goals in life. But it's really difficult for an organization to find a sense of purpose that the team can rally around, that they all get behind. And when you look at it, and, you know, Simon Sinek, if you've ever read any of his material around the Golden Circle and his sense of purpose and what he says about companies like Apple, it really is about looking at yourself as an organization and saying, well, what are we trying to achieve here together? And how can we all understand what our purpose is so we can get behind it? Because it's such a powerful thing and it's very difficult to find. But once you've found it, people will fall over themselves to come and work for you.
Agreed. Yeah. Interesting, mate. It is really interesting. But I don't want to keep you much longer, Barry. It's been really cool chatting with you so far. But just for me, just to try and close this off, you know, it's easy to see that you kind of have the passion now. If you were to say to maybe a younger version of yourself or someone who perhaps might be listening to the show who, you know, is really kind of inspired by your career and would like to kind of emulate it, what is there anything that you can kind of characterize that you would say you've been really consistent at that's allowed you to, you know, attain the success that you have for, you know, such a period of time?
That's a tough question to finish on.
Well, I was hoping to get the wheel turning and then maybe we'll, you know, ask the big question at the end.
I think genuinely it's what has given me my success is just that constant yearning to learn from others. I think that's been the one thing that's been consistent throughout my whole career. I've always had that desire. I've always had that belief that you can never stop learning, and everything you learn is such an important part of what makes your future self who you are. And that's really what I've held on to, and just always strive to find that next thing to learn, what's new and what's interesting for me.
Awesome, mate. Yeah, I think it's great advice. I think that it's interesting to go down that road because I think a lot of people may kind of, they love the, I don't know whether it's the very Americanized way of kind of, you know, you've got to just, you know, do whatever it takes and, you know, this and that. But I think it's the subtleties. It's the kind of the willingness to, you know, be self-effacing and push yourself to learn things. And I think the outcomes will always be kind of, will come from that progressive way that you kind of learn in order to better yourself. I think it's really good advice, mate. Cheers, Barry.
Yeah, no worries. Just one thing I'll leave you on with that learning process is a lot of it is around leadership. You know, a lot of people will say, oh, there's these natural born leaders. I genuinely don't believe that's the case. I think that anyone can become a leader, and it is about that learning. It's about having the desire to lead and inspire others. And the only way you can inspire others is by learning and understanding what's possible. And that's really what should fuel people who aspire to be in, you know, senior roles.
Mm-hmm. Mate, it's been, I've found it difficult to kind of disagree with a lot of the points that you've made today. So I think that's good. It's certainly good from my perspective. So thank you so much for taking the time, Barry. I really enjoyed it, mate.
Maybe I haven't been controversial enough.
No. We try and avoid the clickbait route and just try and make it as organic as possible. But you haven't seen the edited version yet. No, I'm just joking. Thanks, Barry. Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.